If you see something, say something. At Reply, weird things come with any weird story you find on the web, and you can help make weirdthings.com even weirder. This episode of Weird Things is brought to you by Scam School Book 1, available right now. Folks, it's the compilation of over 80 tricks from the popular web series Scam School, starring Weird Things host Brian Brushwood. The material is from over 200 episodes. There's audio commentary on every trick, over 35 video demonstrations, and it's laid out beautifully. It's absolutely the future of instructional ebooks. You need to see it to believe it. Get all the information at scamschoolbook.com. And by Andrew Maine's Angel Killer, the brand new thriller novella available for only a dollar. In front of security cameras, a tourist vanishes from the top of the Empire State Building and mysteriously falls to her death moments later in Times Square. A young girl dies crawling out of her own grave after having been declared dead a year earlier. On Fort Lauderdale Beach, a missing World War II airman and his aircraft show up as if he only died hours before. They call the mysterious man behind these unnatural events the Warlock. To some, he's a messenger of a modern age of miracles. But to Jessica Blackwood, FBI agent and daughter of a legendary magic family, the Warlock is a trickster and a murderer, and she's the only one who can see through his deceptions. Angel Killer is available now on Amazon for only 99 cents. Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, ghouls and goblins, welcome to this episode of Weird Things. Now, my voice may sound unfamiliar to you because, well, I've been traveling afar, and we've had some other people come in here, some upstarts like Tom Merritt and Scott Sigler, and we're very happy to give those guys a chance to speak to a larger audience than they're used to.
before we kick them out the door.
Yes. I am joined, of course, am Andrew Maine. I'm joined by Mr. Justin Robert Young.
Oh, my God. I'm so glad that I don't have to carry the mail on this podcast. I can get back to my normal role of really annoying one-liner guy.
And Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Did you see that? Like, just then, that uncomfortable silence? Justin felt no need to fill that in. He's like, he's going to let it go. Somebody else is driving. Because that's it.
There we go.
How was traveling the world recently, sir? Did you see anything weird?
I'll get into a little bit of that. I went to Jerusalem, which I had an interesting experience there.
You're like, gentlemen, it turns out I am Christ Jesus returned to you.
you laugh.
I know, it's a whole syndrome, right?
Like, I've got photographic proof.
What?
What?
It's like a novelty booth
later on. I'll get into, like, apparently I'm the Messiah a little bit later on. Well,
it's not the top story we're going to cover here. A tease.
No. I mean, in my own mind, we'll get into that. I had a lot of fun. I was in Italy. It was in Northern Italy in the Alps, which was great. It was really cool. And then I got to go to Israel, which was pretty awesome. Had a big blast there. And it was like all of a sudden the words start showing up everywhere.
Yeah.
For me, it was shawarma, because, like, I ate it all the time in Israel, and I was, like, crazy for shawarma, and then I saw the Avengers, and I'm like, it's about me.
Well, what's funny is I heard that on the Avengers, and I'm like, I guess that's a thing I'm supposed to know. I'm out of the loop on shawarma.
No.
Well, yeah, I've been prepped for it.
Dude, so Andrew comes back from Israel, and all he's talking about is all the awesome shawarma he ate, and he hasn't seen the Avengers yet, and I have, and I'm just like, but I can't say it because it's a really funny joke, and then there's the kicker, and, like, and I wouldn't do that to a friend, but, like, all I want to do is just be like, you're going to really like this joke of the Avengers, it's going to be really awesome. Also, I like shawarma, too.
So did you stick around for that little kicker after the credits?
Oh, no, we like to get up at the middle of credits for Marvel movies because we're idiots.
Well, they already had, but they had, like, credits, and then they had the thing after the credits, and so I actually left because what are they going to tease? What are they going to tease? The next Avenger movie?
They're going to recruit themselves.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, now we found the most less-known Marvel hero. It's Speedball. And it's...
Well, remember that... They went and there was the story they went to go shoot something, right? And they like already showed the premiere. And my guess, this is just my guess, was they already shot the movie and they did their premiere for it. And Whedon's sitting in the back of the audience and they do the little teaser, which we won't spoil for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And then he realizes people are still sitting around.
Because they've been trained.
Yeah. And he's like, oh.
See, so all I'm not dumb for thinking that there wouldn't be anything there. Me and Joss, we think the same way.
No,
yeah. So he called up.
It's actually the opposite.
No, Joss, but see, are you listening to his story? He's saying that Joss didn't think to put anything at the end after the credits until he noticed everyone was sitting there.
Because everybody else was sitting there watching.
Right. So me and Joss were the only ones who didn't think there needed to be something after the credits.
And I just love the idea that like Joss
did need to be something after the credits. That's why he went and shot it.
The arc light. Pulling out a cell phone, he's in the corners. People are flying out. He's like, "Hey, Robert, I need you to tomorrow. Are you okay? Scarlett, can I get you? Chris, are you free? Okay, I got this thing going on. All right, can we all do it? You know, like it's just like a bunch of people, like you know, let me get them on the phone. Let me see if we can do it, and just throw it. And that happens too.
And they just like party line. It's just like an actual Avengers, like, you know, like, hey, can you add them to your iPhone call? And meanwhile, it's just all of the Avengers talking to each other.
Yeah, it'd be awesome.
Yeah.
So let's get to our first story here. I don't want to cover anything we may have already talked about, but
if we start going into territory that we've already covered, I'll ring the we've already covered that bell that I have sitting next to me.
Okay, well, the first thing I've been very, very excited to talk about is...
Ziggler did it.
It involves sharks and laser beams.
No!
Ding-a-ding, 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 ding-a-ding.
Ah, psych. So here's something I want you to think about. Totally new scenario. Pretend you live in jolly old England, and it's the Olympics, and you have the opportunity... to have something very special.
Wait, hold on.
Bing ding dong, boodling bing, bing dong, da dong, ding ding.
A giant sculpture twice the size of the Empire State Building, the Statue of Liberty, built in the city. I watched that show. I know what you guys.
Okay.
I was at the airport listening to the feed.
I almost had to reverse bell.
And twice as high as Nelson's Column. For all of our jolly old Brits there, they have a sculpture called the Orbit, which is made of steel. And, you know, it looks like it might make a really cool kind of water slide or roller coaster. But I'm looking at this giant sculpture and I'm like thinking, man, have we ran out of ideas?
Well, maybe you're not painting it as boring enough to me. Can you make it sound more boring?
Yeah,
because the water slide sounds kind of rad.
I'm only half sleepy.
Yeah.
It would be – no, it's cool if you get to go, hey, I get to go in there. It's not a real functional water slide. Like there's a school – like LA County Schools has this like $500 million school they built that looks like it's got this water slide that ends in like 10 stories off the ground. And it's just some weird thing they put on the roof. And so this looks like kind of like a potato curly fry with like – steel wrap. It doesn't look like anything. And I don't think art has to look like stuff, but you look at this and you're like, man, you know, what happened to like statues of people dominating over the landscape?
Boring. What's it like back in ancient Greece? I thought we knocked all the heads off of those stupid people statues.
How about a giant Churchill? Would you like that? I like a giant. I'd love a Maggie Thatcher, but let's settle for a Churchill.
Yeah, maybe if like her hair is constantly on fire, or if
awesome, like Churchill with his boot on Hitler's head,
and then meanwhile, Churchill's eyes are constantly shooting out spotlight lasers that are scanning like Churchill's.
Oh my god! What if Hitler's head was an eternal flame?
Like,
It was just Churchill shooting laser beams right into Hitler's face, and his face was just on fire, but it was fire.
Churchill's eyes are shooting like lasers into the sky, but his cigar is just dropping flames onto Hitler's head.
Oh, that'd be great.
I almost want to make it like super modern, where it's just like he just finished a fatality on Hitler, and he's holding like the spinal column of Hitler dripping, you know, alabaster blood with his face, and he's like, oh no.
Yeah. Or at the very least, like Harry Potter, you know, like he was a famous Brit, you know.
Man, what if we had fanfic statues where it's like you just wrote all these.
Dude, but like how different, if they built a Harry Potter statue, how different would that be than Philly building a Rocky statue, which they actually did?
Wait, did they really? I mean, in the movie they did. They did. That's a real statue?
Yes.
See, I remember that from Rocky 3.
They have a statue to Rocky, who, by the way, is fake, and not to Joe Lewis, Joe Frazier, who's actually from Philadelphia and was a famous boxer.
Wow.
In reality.
I don't know how I feel about that. I think I'd rather have the statue of Rocky, because I don't care about real sports. I care about badass, you know, or like the RoboCop statue, right? Like, I'd rather have a RoboCop statue than a statue. I probably shouldn't keep
of
talking.
Of real cops. Yeah, I just realized
that's a terrible, terrible thing to say.
And yet you said it.
I didn't. I almost said it.
Well, while we're on the subject of giant fanfic,
yeah,
an engineer has suggested, he's proposed, probably heard about this, that we should build a full-scale Starship Enterprise.
I did not hear about this.
And his idea for the Enterprise, though, he says, we could build an Enterprise. And the problem, he says, it would look like the Enterprise, but like the saucer section would have a spinning centrifuge.
Oh, like a gravitron.
What's that?
Like a gravitron. It'd be like a theme park ride.
Exactly. Would have that, and then it would use ion propulsion. It wouldn't have teleporters. And so he's like, we could kind of build it. He's actually got a website, which I'm going to try to find.
Don't wait a minute. He means in space, like
not Las Vegas, but actually in space. And you know, his idea is like, it could like inspire people, and you know, I think he's saying that, you know, people like the dream is dead, but
I don't know. Okay, so like
the dream of building the Enterprise.
I mean, you realize like at the weight, what is it? Ion engines create about as much propulsion as you receive weight of gravity from a piece of paper on your palm. I mean, you realize we'd build this thing and we'd have a ribbon cutting ceremony.
Oh no, there's ion propulsion has come a long ways, and there's stuff on the drawing boards that would get you to Mars, and like using like, and he says using a 1.5 like megawatt reactor, you'd be able to get to Mars in 60 days. Because the thing about ion propulsion is it's steady.
Yeah. Well, but. I don't know. If you're going that fast, though, you're accelerating the whole way there and decelerating the whole way back. Do you even need a gravitron spinny part of the thing?
You're not going to get, like, 1G acceleration.
Well, I know, but I mean, you get, like, what, maybe a fifth of a G, or tenth of a G?
I would think even far, far less. Like, one constant, like, 1G acceleration would put you at, like, speed of light in, like, a week or something. I mean, it's...
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, then... All right, so you get the space. But what about the shielding? Don't you need like a massive, giant solar shield for the killing radiation coming at you?
Yeah, well, his design is like basically putting it inside of the hull, and you know we're gonna deal with that. And he has a website called buildtheenterprise.org, and you know the idea is to build it over the next 20 years. And it's kind of like, all right, listen. We've talked about this before, and one of the things I would love, and there was actually some interesting little data points that I didn't realize about the space program in the 60s. One of the things we thought about doing was flyby missions of Mars and an asteroid, because a flyby is a lot easier than actually trying to land on it. And that's one of the things we talked about doing was actually let's do a flyby by Mars.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, have astronauts go fly around to an orbit of it and come back to Earth without having to land, which would be very exciting. I love the idea of a deep space ship that goes beyond Earth orbit and can go to the moon and could go other places without having to worry about landers and stuff. I like that idea, but the idea that let's make it look like the Enterprise.
Right. Well, that, yeah.
That's silly.
Well, but like, all right, so in that 60 Minutes thing on SpaceX, Elon Musk talked about how, like, the beginnings of the beginnings of his thoughts about SpaceX started with an idea of him wanting to set up a greenhouse on Mars and just, like, live streaming it. And that that would just serve as a testament to curiosity about, like, hey, look, I can just go on the internet and type www.elonsgreenhouse and see Mars at any time. And then it was,
and it's like
him realizing,
you know, he's like, hey, bust this, feds.
Yeah. I'm smoking my dope. But the
exactly. I got that crazy, that OG Mars chronic. Eat it, space pigs.
They call this red dust. No, well, the thing is, like, there were proposals, right, in NASA for one-way missions to Mars, and because they're exponentially cheaper. Like you could spend way less to get the fuel to get someone to Mars if you don't also have to send with them the
That's
fuel to get them
horrible idea. It is an absolutely horrible, horrible, horrible idea. Are you the Russians sending dogs to their death?
No, but that's just it. Okay, first of all, you'd have no shortage of volunteers. Everyone would want to do it, right?
Yeah, and, what? You know, there are places in Japan where they have volcanoes. We have no shortage of young people who want to throw themselves into it. It doesn't mean we should encourage it.
Why on earth not? Let me tell you, first of all, listen to this, okay?
Because we're a moral society.
It's not immoral. What's immoral about telling someone that they can't go to Mars and live there?
To die.
It's, yeah, why don't we solve the problem first instead of just setting people on death missions?
Oh, I can't believe you guys are chicken. I thought you would be on board on this. This is a great idea. Think about this. Here's the thing. It becomes orders of magnitude more accomplishable and more easy to do. Plus, it's not a death sentence if what you do is you commit to keep sending supplies so that people can live there. Elon Musk, I believe, this is my prediction, and 30 years from now we'll dig this up. Elon Musk, once the cost to get stuff into orbit gets low enough, he can just send himself on a mission to Mars and just, with all his billions and trillions of dollars, just keep sending the supplies coming as long as he feels like, what would be wrong with that?
No, but he wants to do it as a colonizer.
Yeah, no, I know. That's right. What there. Is different? I say it's a one-way trip, and you're like, oh, no, but this is different. He wants to do it as a colonizer.
We're talking about sending one guy to Mars. Like,
yes.
Hey, see you later, Larry.
No.
That's not a colonizer. That's a dude.
All right, number one, even if there is just one guy, and he does just go there to slowly freeze to death, I strongly support not only the importance of allowing somebody to do with their lives. He owns his body. He knows what he's in for.
He wants to pay for it, sure.
He can do whatever he wants. Nobody's asking NASA to do it. The point is let's say you get everybody, you're like, let's send one guy. And whoever funds it, the person who funds it knows what he's getting into. Where's the problem here?
I hate Peter. Well, let's get rid of Peter.
No, Peter's the one saying, I would really like to be the one to go and live as long as I can on
that's
Mars.
That's like a peer pressure thing. Like, you're in a room with
How
a bunch
is that
of
a peer
astronauts
pressure
and
thing?
Everyone's like all, right, all like
what
like,
happens?
Hey,
what
one.
Happens when we send this guy? Like, we have a problem with Antarctica right now. You know, when you get people who get sick there in Antarctica even. And they need, you know, tumor surgeries, things like that, that even like the brilliant people we have there, and that's difficult enough. So we send Peter to Antarctica, and then he's like, oh, crap, I've got a lump in my chest.
Well, then the same thing that happens when you have a lump here in the third world. You do the best you can for as long as you can, and then you either live or die.
And the whole world gets to watch this guy go, I want to go home.
No.
I want to go home.
Can't
you guys send another rocket to bring you back?
You are cowards. You are chickens. You have lost. You have lost your reach for the stars. This is what concerns you. You have no idea how disappointed I am.
Yeah, humanity. We still have our humanity.
This
about
is
us.
Cowardice. This is terrible. These are free people. The people funding it know what they're in for. The guy taking the mission knows what he's in for. It would be the most significant, most important first step onto another real planet by a human being. It would inspire generations for millennia to come. And
no,
you guys say no.
No. You want to know what would inspire generations for millennia to come? Us actually going to Mars and, like, colonizing it with people and not a dude.
And you've got to have one person go. At some point, you got to have one person go.
I would like it to be when it's not a death wish.
It's not
flags. It's not flags and footprints. It's sustainability.
Wait, you know, that's when we go. We go when
you
we
guys
can
are
make
chicken.
It
you can't. There's a gap. There's a gradient from one to the other. This is how the New World was discovered. People who left with everyone thinking there's no way they're coming back, and many of them didn't. It was a death sentence for them. It was a death sentence for the Vikings
reason we didn't succeed until a certain point in time. And the idea is,
but along the
if
way,
we know it's a death sentence, why do it? It's if we if you
the
can
Vikings
send people
did.
Over farming
the
tools.
The Vikings did. That's how the Vikings kept discovering the New World. And we have evidence of them having made it all the way to the America. They didn't go back. They didn't go.
Where are
the
Vikings they left. Now? They actually left Newfoundland. It got too cold. They were able to survive.
They didn't go intending to come back. They left intending to keep on going.
But they had boats that could bring them back.
They had boats to try to. Most of them didn't. I don't know.
Help me understand. Here's a possibility.
Help me understand your position. Is your position you should never try unless you're sure that there's a return trip? Because here's the problem. This is why NASA will never accomplish this. Because NASA is so safety conscious. They are so worried about losing astronauts after the Challenger, after Columbia. They're so worried about it that they have to have what they deem an acceptable risk. So it's like, granted, there's a 99.999% chance that if you send one guy, and even if you have a follow-up mission, the odds are he's going to have some kind of shortened life sentence. But he accepts that risk. And likewise, on the flip side, like, when do you decide to go? At 50-50 chance of making
it? It's very easy for us. It's not a matter of we don't accept the risk. You're saying there is no chance of return. That's what you're saying. We're saying if there's some chance of return, we're okay with it. If
that's
it's a high-risk mission, fine. But if
Why?
It's like, no, because it's, again, have you ever heard about, like, the tapes of, like, the first, you know, the what may have been the first, like, cosmonauts?
Oh, yeah. That's horrifying.
Oh, were they? No, tell me about it.
I mean, there was allegedly audio recordings of, you know, like what may have been the first female cosmonaut burning alive on reentry, of guys who were dying in their spacecraft there. And it's horrifying. It's absolutely horrifying. And, you know, the Challenger, okay, when the Challenger blew up, okay, good authority, you know, we have audio of those guys dying,
still being alive,
falling,
right,
surviving all the way to the point of impact. Okay. Now, that's the, you know, and we can, but the point we say with that, we'd say, well, you know, the idea with that mission was that wasn't the intended outcome. When you send somebody to Mars with no return ticket, they're going to die alone on Mars if you don't have another plan. And that's the goal should not to have this person die alone on Mars. The goal should be to have, you know,
well,
a successful Mars
right.
colony.
That is short term.
Right.
What?
Let me just, to your point of inspiration and making it a prescient thought in our culture, what do we want the face of the humanity and Mars meeting to be? Do we want it to be somebody who is going there and either thinks that he's come back, that he's doing his time on Mars and he's exploring this area so we can bring the fire back to Earth? Is it a self-sustaining community of people who are, you know, maybe life's hard out there, but they're all out there and their numbers are growing and they are trying to build and extend humanity's reach? Or do we want it to be a emaciated man on
okay, you can't,
street,
yeah, you
talking
can't.
About how he doesn't want to be there anymore?
But you know
and
that
is like,
this,
he has
you
no way
know,
back.
You know that's
his
not
eyes
how it's going to be.
Slowly tune out as he flings his poo at the live stream camera.
This is how it's going
to
be.
No, okay, but listen, here's the thing, though. If your goal is to colonize Mars, what you need is a string of stories about people who want to go to Mars, not people who want to go touch it and run back home to their comfort of their nest. That's not the pioneer spirit. Pioneers keep going west because they want to live out there forever. And there are people who are in situations. Someone's got a brain tumor. He's going to die anyway. Somebody's their life dream. Why not send them? Why not send them and start it?
Brian,
why not let them go and make
pioneers.
The bed for the rest of humanity? Why not let them go be the first?
You're talking about pioneers going to places where trees grow, where there's air, where there's all these other things, and escaping in many cases very horrible conditions. When we're talking about a place more remote and barren than Antarctica,
no, I understand it. But look, riddle me this, man. Elon Musk is 70 years old. He says, I got all the money in the world. I'm going to fund a ship once a month that's going to send me supplies. I'm just going to go and live on Mars, and I'm not coming back.
Why would you be against that? Categorically, he does not want it to be a flags and footprint mission. He wants it to be sustainable.
I didn't say what did the actual Elon Musk said. I have proposed you a scenario and asked you why you would be against it.
Again, if he wants to, if he wants to go
him,
do this,
then he can do what he wants.
Okay,
you
so
started off with NASA.
I never said NASA. I said NASA had it as a proposal, but I don't think NASA would never have the stones for this.
I think that's good.
Oh, you guys are so chicken. You're so chicken. I would go.
What are you doing? What are you going to go do? Where are you moving?
What are you talking about?
I'm saying is you're telling us we're speaking on behalf of somebody else. I'm chicken. I don't want to watch somebody die.
But see, that's
I don't want to be entertained by somebody's death.
That's the reason that we don't have the courage to do great and insane things, because we have people like you who tell other people what they should and shouldn't do. You should be free to do crazy, stupid stuff that other people find horrifying.
I think you should be free, but there's a reason why I refuse to be entertained by somebody else's misery.
I don't see the gain in just sending people places so they die in that place. Like, I just think it doesn't serve our greater good of how we want to interact with Mars.
If Brian ran NASA, hey, check out the spaceship, guys. Oh, it's great. Hey, where's the parachute? Parachute? What are you, pussies?
I'll tell you what, it's people like you that are all concerned with the parachutes and whether or not they exist or not that prevent us from living life like birds.
Re-entry shielding.
All right, Brian. Let me remind everybody what's really important.
Brian, have the last word. Seriously. Come on.
Why are you clamming up?
I have been trained to by the two of you.
You get the total last word on this, because we've been beating you up on this. I want you to have the last word.
You certainly have, and I don't feel like anyone even tried to really wrap their mind around the benefits of it. I think you guys made up horrific, ugly tales, and you were not pragmatic about the thing, and I don't feel like anyone on the live stream right now was really listening to me.
All right. Well, do you want to...
Next. Justin,
you wanna
go on.
Move it along? All right. Yes. We'll move it along. Hey, folks. Let me tell you about a man named Sniper Guy. Yeah. Sniper Guy just started a podcast on PC gaming called Kabamcast. Say it with me now, friends. Kabamcast. K-B-A-M. It stands for keyboard and mouse. It's fun, and boy howdy, would they love some more iTunes and YouTube subscribers. So head on over to iTunes and YouTube, search for KBAMCAST, and if you dig on PC gaming, boy, you're sure going to love it. Thank you to Sniper Guy for sponsoring the Weird Things podcast. Remember, you can go to weirdthings.com/sponsor and get whatever you want read on this podcast for only $30. So check that out, and thank you again to Sniper Guy for sponsoring.
So there's a prison and they've got a problem. They've got an inmate there who is been plotting against the guards and the people inhabit the prison, and basically he's kind of staying a step ahead there. Hypothetical, let's say. Okay. At what point do you start to worry? You know, you go into this guy's cell and you find a shiv.
All right.
Okay. But maybe it's not a prison. Maybe he's not really a prison. Maybe he's, you know, a person being held against his will or something. Okay. You start finding out that maybe he's making zip guns. You know, he's marking out when the guards are moving around. Maybe it's a mental hospital. Maybe he's a patient in a hospital. Okay. And he's not like mentally ill. But you start to notice that he's uncomfortable with his captivity or the nurses and the orderlies and the people he's dealing with. When do you start to panic and worry that this person might be up to something else?
I mean, is he saying anything threatening?
Every now and then he'll throw something at a nurse.
I say send him on a one-way trip to Mars.
I say send him to Brushwood's Martian Auschwitz.
So let's say hypothetically it's a research hospital, whatever. This person has a condition that's interesting, it's worth noting. And they're studying this person because of this condition, and they start to see this person starting to plot, whatever. You know, what do you do? Do you isolate them?
I mean, how good a communicator is he? Is he giving like rousing speeches in
the
mess hall?
No, it's part of the reason you're studying him. He's not a very good verbal communicator.
Studying him. Is it?
All right.
It is a human, right? Or is it?
So there is a chimpanzee at the Sweden's Furevik Zoo named Santino.
Wait, this is like real life Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
It's totally real life Rise of the Planet Apes. So he likes to throw rocks and stuff at visitors. And this researcher started to notice that he was taking hay and then hiding things inside of there. So when they'd go in there to feed him and to clean out, you know, the cave, like, all right, let's make sure there are no rocks, just a pile of hay there. And of course, chimpanzees aren't going to hide something under hay.
Wow.
Santino was, okay? He would wait, you know, move it around, like, you know, planning him, taking before, moving around when they weren't there. He would watch and pick out, wait for the visitors that annoyed him the most, and then he'd throw rocks at them.
Well, and like, he would also. So, like, the people would come and look, you know, at Santino, and then they'd go to another element, and he would, like, hide the rocks that he wanted to throw at them. And then, like, when they were, like, out of sight for, you know, 30 seconds, he'd grab all of his rocks back outside where they were easily accessible and wait till they came back into view so he could sidearm pitch, like, you know, Randy Johnson.
So, like, man, I guess, I mean, the evidence is pretty clear. He gets a kick out of hearing people cry and angrily shout at him for throwing rocks.
But, like, there's a pattern. Apparently, it's like the raptors in Jurassic Park. Like, he's figuring out ways to get around, you know, the patterns of the people taking the stuff from him. And he's figuring out the foot traffic patterns of, you know, visitors and everything. And as they slowly take away his elements of destruction, he's figuring out new ways to get them, new ways to hide them, and new ways to terrorize the zoo-goers.
When we sit down and we list the things that make us special because we're human, one of the biggest things we say, well, we plan for the future. We anticipate the future. Santino is, you know, there was one of the most telling things in human evolution, and this was like near like Ogilvy Gorge in Africa, near the Rift Valley. There was a site where they found a bunch of crushed baboon skulls and skeletons and stuff. And there was a time when our ancestors and baboons, you know, we never really got along, but we were like mortal enemies. And they found up above there a cliff. And in the cliff, they found piles of rocks that our hominid ancestors had been gathering for a period of time, piling these rocks and then waiting for that point when the baboons were going to, like, we were going to trick the baboons and then start pummeling them with rocks.
It was right behind a giant black monolith when
pretty
we
much.
Suddenly decided on, to crush, know, our enemies. And, yeah. Wow, that's amazing.
And so, you know, here you have this fascinating point when you had cooperation, you had planning, you had all this going ahead. The thing we still don't see with chimpanzees is you don't see two chimpanzees helping each other carry something, you know. But here we have this planning ahead, which, you know, one lone chimp, kind of scary.
See, is that like an element of mental evolution for that species? Or is it just a, you know, like this one, like this is like the super genius of chimps?
I don't know. I know that like Matt Ridley talks about and makes a very persuasive case in The Rational Optimist. When you look at the difference between our ancestors and Neanderthal, how our ancestors, you would find axes and you'd find hand axes that were made hundreds of miles away, which implied that we traded for these with other humans. Where Neanderthals, everything they had was made by them. And so they weren't exchanging tools and probably not exchanging ideas. So even within, you know, one of our closest ancestors, of which we still have genes, if your ancestors moved out of Africa,
yeah,
there may have been a genetic component to that. You know, there may be just the cooperation gene.
So do you think does this chimp seem very cooperative? Or I guess they're keeping him in solitary.
Cooperative in death.
He's a lone assassin. He is just a loner out there. And it's a pretty awesome photo, too. You just look at this. He's got this kind of this chimp grimace on his face as he's walking along. He's like, I'm going to get you, MFs. I'm going to get you.
Dude, he is really just he's a bad mother hunter. He is ready to kill and maim at any given turn.
He's not. He's like Rambo. He's like Rambo in the chimp sanctuary. So, do we have any commercial messages?
We certainly do, Andrew. I'm really glad you asked. Listen, this portion of the podcast is brought to you by the Bronies, reminding you that there are much weirder things than adults enjoying a cartoon full of candy-colored ponies. We promise we really do love My Little Pony. Friendship is magic. So thank you to the Brony contingent for sponsoring Weird Things, the podcast.
My kids are watching My Little Pony on repeat, nonstop, all day long.
Dude, is it like, do you feel any compunction to become a Brony yourself?
There are brief moments of like, oh, that's funny, where it's like briefly self-referential, where like somebody will have a moment and there'll be this bright sunburst behind her, and then you'll see the text, you know, wheeling it off behind the prop. There are moments like that really tickle me, but then. You know, the overarching story, though, I just don't think is geared towards me, and I'm not so enamored by the cuteness yet. But maybe it'll grow on me. I'm certainly going to be seeing it plenty between now and my performance at Canterlot Gardens this upcoming up. I'm performing at a Brony convention.
Really?
Yeah. Well, it's a My Little Pony con, and
that's totally different.
So I expect, look, there's a reason they booked my show, and it's not because they wanted somebody who's strictly for 6-year-olds.
Sure. Well, all right. So if you were to rate and in a non-judgmental way, but just in an a oddness of phenomenon, Bronies, would like before you started watching the show, 1 through 10, how weird of a concept is the Brony phenomenon before you started watching the show?
You know what? I think it's more weird for me now, because when I heard it before, I just assumed, I'm like, oh, they say it's written for kids, but it is definitely written for adults, and that's why.
So a low weirdness factor before,
right? It'd be like, but now having seen it now, and keep in mind, this is something the kids are watching nonstop, so I'm not gonna say I really gave it its due. You know, I didn't sit down and try to detect the finer points, and I certainly wasn't appreciating whatever animation things necessarily really attract people. But I would say it's weirder for me now because I said the parts I've watched, I'm like, wow, this is definitely targeted to 6 or 7-year-old. Like, this is not like a Sneak Attack Family Guy or something. This is like.
So the concept of an adult male fan base for this particular show has been weirder for you as you've watched more of it.
Yes. I would agree.
There we go. Well, thank you, Bronies, for helping out on the show.
Yeah, and I look forward to seeing you at Canterlot Gardens.
There we go. Friendship.
Now we return to weird things.
Can we stop doing normal things? Can we start talking about weird things?
Yeah. So I don't know if you heard Kodak, you know, that company that used to make film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In New York City. Brian, hear what they found in their basement?
No. What?
Kodak has this research and development facility in New York City, and just came to light that they had something special in their basement. Justin, do you know what this is?
I actually don't know.
Let's take some guess. What did they find in the basement? I thought everybody knew this. This is awesome.
Naked pictures of John F. Kennedy.
Well, there's got to be naked pictures in there somewhere, right?
It's not photos. It's actually equipment, special equipment.
Is it like, oh my God, is it like a Honey, I Shrunk the Kids gun?
Not quite, no.
No, I wonder if it's something that like predates a popular invention, like maybe, maybe like a motion picture device, but before motion pictures were popularized? Is it something like that, like a precursor invention?
No, let's just say that when it came out that they had this, it was very unsettling to people.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So we can rule out the character Don Draper just consistently giving his pitch for the carousel. That would be pleasant to find.
However, we can't rule out John Hamm actually down there pretending to be Don Draper nonstop.
Imagine if he's just rooting through the Kodak like basement, and that's like his thing. It's like, excuse me, is you John Hamm? No, it's me, Don Draper. The carousel.
That's so funny.
It says more about us than it does about technology. All right, what would be weird down there that is like unsettling? Like, would it be?
Oh, you know what? Like maybe like cages, or like some kind of restraints for like, because they probably wanted to photograph animals, and animals might be unruly. You might have some messed up objects to restrain animals. Maybe like vivisection stuff. Maybe because like from a health perspective, now you got photographs, you want to know what's inside monkeys while they're still alive.
Was it a camera that could be used on Mars where we would send people to die and they'd have to take a picture of themselves every day?
No, and we're not going back to that.
I'm sorry.
Okay. It touched upon kind of in a way indirectly a joke in Ghostbusters.
What?
Remember one of the reasons that, like, you know, they kind of got shut down?
Oh, electricity. Like, they're doing electric shocks?
No.
It was a ghost containment unit?
It was a hallucinogenic gas?
It was a nuclear reactor.
What?
Kodak had 3 pounds of highly enriched uranium, apparently weapons-grade uranium, in a nuclear reactor in the basement that they were using, obviously to check some sort of film kind of thing whatever.
Sure.
Had a full containment system. The government knew about it, but Kodak did not issue any press releases when this was put in.
Wow. That is amazing.
Yeah, it says, you know, the guy Albert Filo, a Kodak research scientist who worked with the device for 20 years, told the newspaper it was a known entity, but it was not well publicized.
Wow.
So at some point, they're just like, yeah. Like, and this is, I mean, God, how long ago was this put in?
They had, like, since before, like, 1974. Because in 1974, they acquired a neutron flux multiplier, which multiplies the neutrons flowing from the core of the reactor.
Wow.
So this is just basically like they pay off. I mean, God, what a different era this is that, like, you know, right now we know, you know, like the whims of Tim Cook on what the back paneling of the new iPhone is possibly going to be, you know? And meanwhile, 40 years ago, Kodak was able to put a nuclear reactor in their basement, and that was able to stay on the QT. That's insane.
No, but I wonder what kind of film they were working with where they were trying to, I mean, I assume use that, in, you know, similar to X-rays. I mean, hey, you know, X-rays are super dangerous, and they we're able to do fantastic things with that. Maybe they thought they're on to like the next X-ray. Maybe they thought like waving uranium, you know, penetrate through a bunch of rocks and you could see through time and space.
They were apparently interested in, you know, the idea of using neutrons to create images of materials without damaging it. You know, you'd need 100 pounds to make a good bomb, but for 3.5 pounds, you can make a really great dirty bomb.
That's awesome.
Which,
so you're saying that Kodak, they could have really effed some S up if they wanted to.
They took it out in 2007. So, but it was in Rochester, New York, actually, was where it was. And so you think for, you know, 30 years, nuclear reactor sitting below, and probably a lot of people in the building didn't even know this was there. And there are like universities that have nuclear reactors or small piles and stuff, but this was a pretty big pile. This was pretty big and, you know, kind of like cool thing.
That's amazing, dude. That's awesome.
Now, Now, at what point, like, does Kodak have to, like, are they trying to get rid of it? Do they list it on, like, Rochester Craigslist? Like, you know, like, hey, is anybody interested in getting a nuclear reactor with, like, 3 pounds of enriched uranium? No solicitations,
please. We
will
not accept inquiries from Iranian area codes.
Like, when you stumble across it and you're like, uranium, I mean, who do you call? I mean, I guess what? The press first? and then who? The cops? You know, 911?
No, apparently, like, there was a dude. There was like the Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade old knight sitting down there that knew about it for, you know, 30 years.
Like, choose. But choose.
You call that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission.
So she was a guy, and it was just like, he probably was just the creepy guy in the office where it's like, oh my god, I had to go down to the third basement today, like, to go get some staples, and I ran into old James.
I want to see you guys, like, come to me, and you be the scientists that are thinking, like, what's the most awesome thing we could have? We got the new boss and he doesn't know anything. What could we talk him into getting
all
us?
Right, so Brian, we find out we're at Kodak. We're part of the R&D department, right?
Yeah.
My name is Orville Slapdash, and your name is Will Wenceslow. Okay. And so we just find out. And meanwhile, Andrew – all right, so here's what happens. This is discovered, and Kodak's like, well, listen, we got to get rid of this because it's obviously a health hazard. The purpose has long passed. We don't need it anymore, and our company's going bankrupt.
I like the idea of you guys trying to talk me into buying it for you.
I was about to say, this is now. What is it? Just jump to a conclusion. I mean, I understand it's old, but I mean, it's weapons grade uranium, boys. Let's not go good, giving it up just to take it out to the dump, out to Yuma, Arizona. We don't need.
Well, yeah. See, as we here, dig on this. Will Wenceslow, research and development scientist for Eastman Kodak.
Sure.
Like, this Kodak, our jobs are hanging by a thread, man. Like, Kodak doesn't sell anything anymore. We're just completely in the dump. But what if we were to say, hey, bank, why don't you extend us a loan? And they'd be like, no, that's a really risky proposition. And it's like, well, man, it'd be really crazy if a dirty bomb went off in your office.
But see, the thing is, you don't need to have the stuff. You can do that today. Like, I might have done that last Thursday. Like, wow, I hope nobody listens to this podcast. But it's like, to make the threat, you don't need to. But it's like wait.
No, but to follow up on it, you do.
But it's like, in that case, like, I don't know. Like, I'll tell you what, here's what we do. We grab the uranium, we go and pack it into a really shabby, dirty bomb, and we find a small...
You get one of those 7-Eleven styrofoam coolers.
Yeah, pretty much. We throw some rusted nails in there and a bunch of M-80s, right? And so, but see, now you got a one...
And confetti, because no one will expect confetti.
Exactly, with party poppers. And so now you realize you can now make any sleepy little town... In the middle of the economic downturn, you can now make them the most famous city in the world. And so now it's like a reality show for, like, podcasting. We're recording ourselves live streaming, like, hey man, it's me and Orville. We're gonna go make a small town famous. Yeah. Like, and so we go, we find an old abandoned warehouse, and then we're like, watch out for the dirty nuke. And then we, you know, boom. And then we don't hurt anybody, but then people show up and they're like, son of a bitch, somebody actually set off a dirty bomb. And then
I like that. And we don't hurt anybody.
Yeah.
Well, no. All right. So then, all right, here. All right, Will Wenceslow. Here's what we do also is we start buying up companies that make commemorative plates and coins.
We find the smallest towns
and we just start printing it before it even goes down. So, like, these guys are taking orders and they're like, really? Why would you want 50,000 commemorative plates that say remembering bum fart Michigan?
Right. Yeah, never forget. I'm gonna put on there, oh my god, we'll buy the Franklin Mint.
All right, let's different scenario here. Okay.
Oh. Okay,
all right, here's the deal. Okay, it's us. Okay.
Yeah,
I get you guys on the phone. I'm like, hey Justin, let's call Brian. Get on the phone.
Bing bing bing.
Listen, Bri, you there?
You have an old phone, Brian.
Bri, are you there?
Ring, ring, yes.
Answer the phone, Brian.
Hello, hello. What's up?
Hey, listen, guys, listen. I just found out there's a building.
There's a building.
Oh, okay. No, okay, sorry. There must have been on our old phone connection. There must have been a hiccup because we only heard there was an old building.
There's a building, and the back door's unlocked, and I found a nuclear reactor in the basement. They're going to take it out next week, but we've got it for 7 days. We can do whatever we want.
All right. So where do we go?
I'm thinking marshmallows first.
irradiated marshmallows.
I mean, if there's ever a time that we're going to get superpowers...
I'm thinking like marshmallows on a really long stick.
Man, I don't know. I'd be terrified of it in real life. Are you kidding me?
I know, but we could use like robotics. Like, you know, we go steal some kids' toys. I want to melt army men. Sooner or later, we're gonna put a spider in there. You know it.
Yeah.
Oh, of course. And then we're gonna make it bite us.
Yeah. Are we gonna like throw popcorn in there? See what happens.
Now, would you eat that popcorn?
I'd get a Geiger counter first.
Yeah.
I'm going to put seeds in there.
Okay, wait. All right. Hold on. For real, though. We pop a bag of popcorn over a nuclear reactor, right?
Yeah.
And it pops. Are you telling me that you guys don't have one piece of popcorn just without Geiger countering it? Just, like, take a kernel of popcorn and eat it?
Yes, I definitely do not.
I'm too dumb about, you know, physics and like how radioactive it is to know if that would be, if we'd be like, oh, it's totally safe. Were you ridiculous? There's no radioactivity there. I don't know. So I don't eat it.
Dude, I have no idea. I am easily the dumbest one amongst the three of us. And I totally eat one. Just because, like, all right.
You know what, I like about this idea is that. You suggested something outrageous and stupid, and neither of us badgered you repeatedly until we finally shut you down. That was my favorite thing about this idea.
I mean, you could.
No, that would be a different program. That's not what Weird Things is. See, Weird Things is three guys who spin fantasies and explore crazy ideas. Usually it is. Sometimes they're a little bit different.
No, Justin, I'm not going to let you eat that.
But I want to eat it, goddammit.
I'm not going to watch you die from radioactive popcorn.
Why I have a spirit of adventure in this country anymore is because people won't eat the popcorn that comes out of a nuclear reactor.
I would be horrified if you ate it because, I realized that I invited you down into the basement and then when you get liver cancer or whatever, you know, I'd be like, why did I bring Justin down here? It's going to be my first response.
All right, but, like, let's say I don't die. That's the coolest thing I've ever done.
Well, you're not going to die right away. You know, you're going to have, like, the little neutrons are going to pierce your DNA.
He might die right away. There's a chance. Yeah. But he probably won't. Probably be a while.
Probably won't.
So how do we cover that up?
And if I do die from eating the radioactive popcorn, so many worse ways to die.
I don't know. I mean, that's radiation. Well, and actually, keep in mind also a horrible way to go.
Yeah, keep in mind also though that you know, a lot of people are terrified of any level of radiation. But aren't there studies that show that with rat populations and even with humans located near areas that have been irradiated, that a slight amount of radiation actually has life extending properties? Did you ever see that?
You mentioned that before.
Let me dig that up here. I'll look it up right now.
That sounds more like a statistical anomaly than, you know, the beneficial.
Man, I'll tell you what, that's what I'm going to call that one piece of popcorn I eat is the statistical anomaly.
Here is
going to go yum-a-dum-dum in my stomach.
I'm putting my marshmallow in there first to see. And then I'm like, popcorn, let's watch it pop. And Justin's like, I got to eat it. And
there's don't eat it.
What? What part of you thinks you may actually get magical superpowers?
I mean, like, I can't say that that's not at least 15% of my thought process.
Because we know of all those real-life superhero teams formed by Russian submarine nuclear engineers, you know,
right,
that are, like, constantly saving villages in Estonia and all that from earthquakes and stuff, because that happens.
So maybe, all right, like it's not actually like a scientific thing where I get superpowers, but like over the last couple of months, I started like running.
And
now I can run faster than I ever did before.
No,
let's say after that popcorn, like I get on some other thing, I develop some other skill, I can always be like, dude, I would have never gotten into this if I didn't eat that one magical piece of popcorn.
Give us a hypothetical skill. What skill?
I feel like it doesn't matter.
I'm really good at chess.
It doesn't matter because he's going to take credit for anything for the rest of his life. He's got this magic bean that whenever he does well, he's like, ah, well, you know, I ate popcorn
once. Next level on Galaga.
Yeah,
exactly. Popcorn. Boom.
Popcorn, right? And you guys tried to stop me.
No, I would totally do that. That would be,
by the way, Brian won the lottery.
Even more insufferable than I am currently.
So, Brian, have we found out about the wonderful life-enhancing qualities of radiation?
Well, it is a definite fact that despite exposure to more radiation over the years, Americans are living longer. But specifically, I'm looking for – there we go. Hiroshima victims live longer is one example. There's some other ones as well. And I don't know if it is just a statistical anomaly. I'll see if I can find something for this.
Yeah, because like the Hiroshima thing, you kind of have like the ones that don't die really quickly because of radiation sickness. You're going to kill off a lot of people who already
There's also spas in Europe where you could go and expose yourself to low level radiation as for its life. I mean, there's an industry. So there's enough people who think
they used to be able to have curatives 100 years ago here. You know, there's the quack medical museums like have a lot of like radioactive displays and stuff.
Right.
But you know,
but whether or not it's true or not, well, I mean, I'll see if I can find an article or something.
I'll tell you what.
I want to believe you.
Me too. Nobody wants to believe me more than Justin right now. It is radiation popcorn.
Justin is like turning weird colors and stuff. And we're like, man, what a great tan. What a great tan. Did you see, what was it, K-19, The Widowmaker?
I don't know what you're talking
about. I didn't see the movie, no.
It's really, I mean, it's about an accident on a Russian nuclear submarine. And the guys have to go in there and weld and try and fix the coolant or else it's going to go thermal. And you see what happens with radiation poisoning. And it's like horrific, horrific.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, it has John Bon Jovi in it, right? K-19, The Widowmaker.
I don't know.
I think it does. Either way, let me remind everybody that there's a Tumblr out there called 20QTUES, so 20QuestionsTuesday.tumblr.com, but it's 20QTUES.tumblr.com. And basically what this guy does, his name is Michael Ryan Hart, and he just asks cool people 20 questions over the course of like a week or so, and he publishes those 20 question style interviews right there on his site. I've done one. Andrew has done one. And Brian is currently in the process of getting his questions from Michael and answering them. But go check it out right now. 20QTUES.tumblr.com and read me and Andrew, who have already done our 20 questions. So check it out. Thank you, Michael, for sponsoring the Weird Things Podcast.
Justin, you were talking about U-571, because I'm going like, K-19, The Widowmaker, it's like a Harrison Ford. What are you talking about? But wasn't a submarine movie. You are correct that he wasn't a submarine movie. So
I knew he was in a submarine movie about something crazy going down on a submarine.
All right. Yeah. So specifically, I think what I'm hearing about was the idea that radiation will kill you, and there was predictions after Hiroshima. There were quote, Japanese lives will change for centuries and genetic defects will occur for the next 1,000 years. But atomic bomb survivors appear to be living longer than normal. The average dose was 6.5 millirem, far below the average of 620 millirem per year completely. And there are quack things going into crazy minds. I don't know if that's necessarily it. And of course, we've talked before about Chernobyl being blown out of proportion.
Yeah.
But, I totally buy into what you're saying there about like, yeah, how much radiation we can handle, all that, and what, and you know, when we figure out what safe limits are, you know, it's trying to figure out what this is. But I'll give you a really, really crazy theory that's gaining some credibility, okay?
Go for it.
I'm going to try to explain it right, but there's a research paper out there right now, and the hypothesis of this is when you look at major extinction events in our history, when you look at extreme weather patterns and big changes and all that, the single biggest driving factor has to do with the movement of the Earth and the solar system and our proximity to, like, major stellar events like supernova and et cetera, okay? That's the biggest cause of these things. That is, intense amounts of radiation affect climate, affect extinction. And that's the single biggest driver. It may even cause progress.
Cause progress? What do you mean?
Well, you wipe out, certainly you wipe out 99% of the animals on the planet, and that 1%, which is maybe a little more evolved, a little more adaptable, comes forward. And one of the things about evolution is we develop things that are more complex. And, you know, when we go back and forth about, is there possible for there to be intelligent life out there? And I say my argument, like, we've had life for billions of years and no intelligent life, but then a mammal brain is a much more complex brain than's ever existed before. We've got a reptilian brain, we've got mammal brain, we've got primate, we've got neocortex, all these layers on top of there, which, you know, extinction events and all that make that possible. So that's sort of the con to my argument to that. And so the idea that we are radically affected by the galaxy is fascinating.
Yeah. Well, and the idea that I mean, I don't know. I remember being terrified finding out that if any of our neighboring stars within what, like 100 light years were to have one of those gamma bursts. What is it when they go supernova that they release the big burst of gamma rays? That enough to sterilize our planet, essentially? I'm going to have to look that up now.
Yeah, I'm going to pull up this paper. But yeah, I mean, that's, you know, are close enough to it. So the supernova life, okay, so it's the cosmic jackpot was the title of the article I'm found in here. So the Royal Astronomical Society published Henrik Svevitsmark's latest paper entitled Evidence of Nearby Supernova Affecting Life on Earth. He shows how the variable frequency of stellar explosions not far from a planet has ruled over the changing fortunes of living things for the past half billion years. And so it's a huge paper, 15,000 words, 22 figures, 30 equations, which, you know, of course, could be nonsense. But it is as important, it's being considered by some people as important as the theory of plate tectonics, which wow. Most geophysicists, and one of the fascinating things about plate tectonics, and a great description was, in 1960, if you believed in plate tectonics, you know, you were not going to be taken seriously by any geophysicist. Nobody would hire you.
Right.
By 1970, if you didn't accept plate tectonics, nobody was going to hire you. That radical change. And so there's a fascinating graph which talks about how the Milky Way, the star formation, supernovas, and how it drives all these things on our planet from sunlight, atmosphere, clouds, you know, all these other things, which, you know, in some camps is controversial to say that maybe weather could be affected by things besides the static sun, which never changes and all that stuff. But right. It's absolutely very, very interesting because they start to plot the different supernova events and then periods where you have the different ages, like the Permian, the Triassic, the Jurassic, and all this. And then you look at when we were exposed to these intense amounts of solar radiation and the supernova explosions, and there is a very high matchup between these things.
Wow.
Which?
Huh. I found that gamma ray stuff. It was an article talking about Wolf-Rayet stars, where they burst giant bursts of gamma rays for extended periods of time. And there's some article on RichardDawkins.net where he reposts it from FirstScience.com, an article by Naomi Miles, talking about how Earth was a massive blast of radiation from space once almost sterilized the Earth. He's like, that's all I need to read to be terrified of the stars now. Because it's like any one of those bastards can just go rogue on us, can reach into the pile of hay and start flinging rocks at me.
Yep. And then we're all down. That's like, no matter how many enriched popcorn kernels I eat.
I'm more terrified of that than, you know, a 1 or 2 degree increase in the temperature, to be honest with you.
Whatever, neocon.
You guys got any picks?
Yeah, let's pick it up. I got a thing. I can go first.
Go for it.
Go first.
All right. So I do another podcast with Andrew Main called Andrew Main Stories.
Never heard of that.
Sorry.
Are we frozen?
No, Justin's frozen. No, Justin's definitely frozen in time. He ate
a radioactive popcorn. No! And now he died. Justin!
Oh, no!
We hardly knew ye! Now he's calling back. Thank goodness.
Let's see.
I don't know how that happened. All right.
you didn't eat a glowing popcorn kernel off
no,
the floor,
No, I could hear you guys talking about me being frozen. I hate that. It's like listening to your own funeral.
Your children talking about you over there, over your body.
All right. It's like, yeah, it sucks. He's dead. Yes, you know, Pizza Hut, I got a coupon. You want to go?
So I do a podcast with Andrew Main called Andrew Main Stories. Andrew Main writes short stories. I read them audiobook style. But there was a short story that I really, 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 really enjoy that is written from a female perspective that would be really weird if I just did the, and this is the throaty female voice for the entire 10-minute read. So what we did is reached out to friend of the podcast and empress of the internet, Veronica Belmont, who did a awesome reading of Andrew Main's short story, Secret Identity, that is the most recent edition of the Andrew Main Stories podcast. So what I want everybody to do is head on over to iTunes or just go to andrewmainbooks.com and at least listen to that episode, and if not, give the rest of them a chance because I think they're pretty cool. I love doing it, and I loved Veronica's rendition of that story, and she's awesome, the story's awesome, and you're awesome if you listen to it.
Right on.
I got two picks. One's a small pick. It's just a recommendation out there. A lot of people who listen to our podcast are creative people who either are into doing screenplays or books. And I've been playing around with a really, really cool app called Story Skeleton. It's for iOS devices. And it allows you to do these note cards to do scenes or chapters of what you want, reorganize them. And then you can export them as an outline into Final Draft, if you use that, or Scrivener, if you want to do chapters. Check it out. It's called Story Skeleton. Very, very cool. Now I'll do my entertainment pick. Okay?
Yeah.
I mentioned at least once, possibly twice before. It was one of those things I found on Netflix when it was streaming, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. At first, I had to wrap my head around it. Then I got into it, and I dug it. And that was The Color of Magic, which was a two-part miniseries based on the Terry Pratchett novel, Color of Magic, and I think the second book after that. It's really fun. It's set in the Discworld, which is this kind of like Harry Potter-esque kind of realm for people who aren't familiar with Terry Pratchett, which I think many of our listeners are. And it was a really fun kind of story about this wizard escorting this first tourist across Discworld while major events play out there. And so it's got magic and silliness and a little bit of satire and a lot of fun. They did another one called Hogfather based on that book, which is this sort of weird kind of Christmas sort of tale about the daughter of death plotting to kill the tooth fairy and these other kind of things, which are fun. And they just released another one, which is only available on DVD right now, which was called Going Postal, which takes place in the Discworld universe. Very much enjoyed it. And, you know, it's got narrated by Brian Cox. It's got Christopher Lee doing the voice of Death and some other, you know, really good actors in it. And this is about, in the world of Discworld, there's this competition between the very inefficient post office and this visual telegraph service. And again, it's a quirky, if you like Harry Potter kind of quirkiness, I think you'll really dig it. So Going Postal is there. It's available on Netflix for rental as the DVD. So Terry Pratchett, Color Magic, Hogfather, and now Going Postal. So go watch the trailer for it. I know I'm doing a really disservice to it, but really, trust me. Trust me, guys.
Dude, your recommendation alone is a good thing. I mean, you don't even need to tell me what it is. As long as you say go, then I'll go.
Go. Do it.
I want to recommend another podcast out there. There's a this one first got turned on to me by the folks over at Radiolab. They basically took a Radiolab and gave a couple of guest spots to another podcast by Roman Mars called 99% Invisible. Have either of you guys listened to any of these?
No.
Nope.
They're delightful because they're soundscapes. It's about the hidden about the hidden reasons for things that you see around you, whether it's the story of this park that never gets its foot off the ground. It's perpetually this terrible thing. And you hear the story about the original vision with interviews of the park's architect. And then you hear the human drama of him having to watch it become a place for hobos and watch the city do in every way the opposite of what he meant this thing to be. There's another one where a guy investigates. He sees underground writings, etchings into the concrete that says Nico was here all over San Francisco, and they're from the 1960s, because when you use acid to etch in, it's going to stay there pretty much forever. And his quest to finally find this guy, Nico, who I won't spoil how it ends, but it has an interesting twist in there. They're great vignettes, especially because at around 10 minutes apiece, they don't overstay their welcome. And specifically, I want to point out my all-time favorite one. If you go to 99percentinvisible.org, they're all there. I actually went ahead and set up on my podcaster app. I was out for a three-hour bike ride, and it was awesome because one would end and the next one would just come on. It was just like this nonstop little 10-minute storytelling on and on and on. But then one of them ran across... and this is why I brought up the Mars thing earlier. He ran across. Oh, let me find it in here. Oh, there we go. He posted one that was for a pilot that never got picked up. And basically the description says, with the final launch of the space shuttle program, there's been a lot of talk about the next step. Here's a pilot that didn't go anywhere. It's really gorgeous with the interviews that he does and the artistic way he portrays the importance of getting to Mars by any stretch, whether you make it or not. I highly recommend, if you want to hear what I was trying in my pale shadow way to capture as we were arguing earlier, then I went ahead and set up a tiny URL. Go to tinyurl.com/weirdjerks, and you will be able to listen to that right away. It's only 11 minutes long, and I think you'll like it a lot.
Very cool.
Here we go.
Speaking of space, real quick, SpaceX has said they're going to try now for a May 19th
launch. May 19th, yeah. Do you think it's going to happen?
I'm telling you this. If I find out on May 18th that they're still scheduling it, guess where I'm going to be?
Are you going to go and actually watch it?
Yep.
Oh, my God. That's awesome. Where do they launch from?
Space. Canaveral, right?
From where?
Canaveral.
Canaveral. Okay, so this is just up the road for you guys. Man, you'll be there. You'll be there for, like, the big premiere.
Yeah,
the premiere event, and Joss Whedon will watch it and be like, "Wow, there needs to be something at the end." Everyone's still sitting here.
Wow, I just heard really loud lightning and thunder right behind me. That's an ominous portent for SpaceX. I don't like the look of this.
Asgard is angry. Don't challenge Odin.
You can't get here from there. Take your ship.
He
back
is
home.
The only one who gets to fart around on Mars.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. It's been weird.
Feels good to hear you say that again. Feels like everything's right in the world. Can we get a group hug?
You want to sponsor the podcast? Do you have $30? If so, go to weirdthings.com/sponsor, and you can have Justin say whatever you want. He's a trained ape.